Blog Talk Radio.
Coming up on the big show tonight, legendary actor M. Emmett Walsh and director Robert Hall. Coming up on Movie Geeks United. Welcome to another terrific episode of Movie Geeks United. This is certain to be one of the highlights for us, I know, because we're crazy about this first guest we're bringing on tonight. You and I talk about his work often, Jerry.
Yes, we do. It's going to be historic. I've just like been getting the word out the last 5 minutes to everyone. Please join us. This is going to be historic.
Yeah, and a lot of people are tuning into this one tonight. We actually pay tribute to this actor about a year and a half ago. We brought in a couple of his directors because the scope of this man's work is amazing. So many terrific movies on to his credit, and just versatile performances. He's one of the greats, and we're honored to have him tonight.
Yes,
I'm actually a little nervous, and I usually don't get nervous.
You don't get nervous. I get nervous, as I confessed the other night, but you're nervous. Wow, okay.
Don't worry, we'll be fine.
We'll be awesome. If we could survive Rutger Hauer, we could survive anybody.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the call-in number tonight is 718-508-9477 if you have a question for any of our guests or if you want to talk movies a little bit later in the show. We'll welcome director Robert Hall a little bit later, and then we'll bring on our fellow movie geek Chris to go over the latest movie news. And let's get started. Let's get right to this. About this. Our first guest tonight is one of our favorite actors, without a doubt. And over the course of 40 years, he has amassed one of the most impressive resumes in the history of the medium, with nearly 200 film and television credits to his names. Films like Serpico, The Jerk, Straight Time, Brubaker, Reds, Blade Runner, Silkwood, Fletch, Back to School, Raising Arizona, The Music of Chance, The Mighty Quinn, and my personal favorite, Clean and Sober. And who can forget his mesmerizing work in the Coen Brothers' debut film, Blood Simple, for which he won the Independent Spirit Award for Best Male Lead. That's a breathtaking resume.
Our favorite films.
His new film, Don McKay, premieres at the Tribeca Film Festival this Friday, April 24th. We are tremendously privileged to welcome actor M. Emmett Walsh to Movie Geeks United. Mr. Walsh, are you with us?
Hey, my name's Danny DeVito.
Hey, we got DeVito on here? Oh, maybe you can tell us some Andy Kaufman stories.
My press agent screwed this all up.
Well, we'll settle for DeVito.
Anyway, how you guys doing?
We're doing
terrific.
Good. How are you?
I know, it's an obituary you were just reading there. Thank you.
No, not at all. We don't, God forbid.
We love your work, and we are tremendously honored that you're here with us, because we know you don't do this very often. You don't like interviews very much, do you?
I don't like people that do interviews.
I hate myself with great passion, so we have something in common.
Well, let's personalize this. Which one's Jerry and which one's Jamie? How do I tell the difference?
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jamie.
Does that help? Yes, it's a shitload complicated.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like a couple guys that never married. Yeah, okay.
According to my brother, that's the only smart thing I've done.
I'm a bachelor, so I'm walking proof that women are not as stupid as they're given credit for. They pass me up. Anyway, what's up? So we got this film opening, Don McKay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Which I've not seen.
You haven't seen? Will you be seeing it at the film festival?
Yeah,
they're
making me stay in it. I'm in New York right now, and okay. I just came back, I think, to sell my co-op. Anybody else that wants to buy it, probably. 40% less than what it's worth. So I'm staying for the opening of that on the on Friday night. Then I go back to L.A. And I've not seen it. I did loop on it or do some additional dialogue back 3 or 4 weeks ago, but I couldn't tell anything from that. So it stars Thomas Hayden Church, and it's his movie, basically. And Melissa Leo's in it. She just got an Oscar nomination there for the driving a car across the St. Lawrence River. But so that's it. As I say, I've not seen it. It's kind of a noir,
yes.
You know. And I don't know anything about it.
Tell me a little bit about your character and why it appealed to you.
Well, as usual, it's a love interest.
Right, right.
Which one was that, Jerry or Jamie?
Right?
Who got the laugh there?
I laughed, yes.
Okay.
So you're
anyway,
a romantic lead in this, right.
Anyway, basically at this phase of my career, I'm driving a taxi cab. And I pick them up 10 or 12 times. They don't let me walk and talk anymore. You know, I have to be planted. I have to be, you know, they don't trust me in front of a camera to do that. So if they hire me, I'm normally sitting someplace. Maybe I'm the Sydney Green Street now of my time. But
is it like you're not allowed to move at all in the last couple of roles?
No, I said that, but it sounded funny when I said it.
No,
yeah. No,
of course it does.
Anyway, I'm driving a cab. I pick him up. He's constantly going back and forth, you know. And, you know, I pick him up and drive him, and he's being monosyllabic in the back seat of the car. Occasionally, he's in the front seat. I mean, that's about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's Thomas Hayden. And, you know, he got a nomination there for the wine thing, whatever that was called.
He's terrific. Yeah. Sideways. Yeah.
Sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
I mean, he had all those years on Wings, you know, and it's, you know, I have no idea. As I say, it's, I noticed that it's not the opening or the closing film at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's in the middle someplace. You know, at least it's a Friday night. I mean, it could have been a Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, so it must be
yeah.
a little bit better than that.
Well, that being said, do you enjoy the film festival experience, and do you enjoy watching yourself in a film?
The I don't have any mirrors at home. The the film festival, I haven't done that many of them. You know, the my film my films are inclined to open at 10 o'clock on Tuesday mornings. But
right.
Anyway. I don't mind it. You know, it's I'm not that kind of a public person. My mother raised me with the axiom of foolish names and foolish faces, all seen in public places.
Right.
You know, so I kind of avoid it as much as I can. Mm-hmm. But if I can help it, which this supposedly is doing, I'll do what I have to. I don't want to be known as a total malcontent.
Right.
So
right.
I do it, and. As to watching my stuff, you know, what the hell, I'm pretty good. I'm always, you know, I like to surprise myself, and I look at it and I say, yeah, that's okay. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, it's not Gary Cooper or something here. You know, I'm just out there doing it, and it's a taxicab driver, fine, I do it. It's a taxicab driver. Is it, you know, the president of Princeton? Yeah, the president of Princeton. Princeton's not very happy when I play their president, but other than that, I have a lot of fun with it. So I just like to see what I can get away with. I don't want to do the same guy ten times in a row.
You haven't. With so many credits to your name, I'm curious from you, which ones you think best represent what you're capable of? Which ones are your favorite?
There's 106 films. I just signed to do another one now, 107 in June. But, you know, if I were – back in the 40s or 50s or 30, even 30s, I guess, I'd be a contract player for MGM or Universal or something. You know, I'm just one of these old guys that show up. And in England, a character person, we saw their movies. You know, we didn't know it was a fishmonger. It was a fishmonger. We didn't know that at night they were playing Ophelia, you know, in something. You know, they went back and forth. We never knew who they were. Here people become more aware. And I get away with people don't know who I am, and they see the character, and that's okay. It helps the film along.
Mm-hmm.
As to my, you know, some of that stuff is pretty good. I've done some pretty good. You know, of course, as you guys mentioned, I got the awards for Blood Simple, the Coen Brothers' first film. And, you know, there's other, you know, there's 15 or 20 things that are kind of interesting as I look along. And a lot of them are boiling pots. A lot of them are, you know, take the paycheck and run. But, you know, I don't phone it in. I work hard at it.
Right.
Unlike today, yes, my dime, this telephone call. Thank you.
Can I ask you about one movie in particular that I think is my one of my favorite movies?
See, I know nothing about your taste.
Well, I saw that I love most of your films, but this one
that also makes you suspect. See,
oh man!
But go ahead.
This one, clean and sober, meant a lot to me when I first saw it, and it continues to mean something to me.
So you're drunk? Yes, fine. What else?
Yes. So did that film speak to you particularly?
Well, my father was AA, you know, and I grew up around it, and you know, I thought it was, you know, it's a tough film. You know,
yeah.
Michael Keaton, that whole thing. Michael's thing was, you know, AA at that time was kind of covering more fields. AA, Michael's character was more or less a druggist. But I thought it was important. And as they say, having grown up with an alcoholic father, a sainted alcoholic father, you know, I knew there's, you know, I knew a lot about the whole situation, and I wanted to be respectful.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of you guys come up and say, you know, that we got it, we nailed it, that was what it was all about. You know, a lot of the Alcoholics Anonymous people and so forth. It is the addiction, though, trying to cure the addiction is all tough, tough, hard work.
Mm.
And we didn't soup over it there.
No.
Clean and Sober is a tough movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it presents it well. I remember I did a TV movie one time called Sarah T, Portrait of a Teenage Alcoholic. And it had that little girl from Linda Blair was in it,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know. And I remember my father, you know, it's pretty heavy or something. You know, and I was saying to my father, it's pretty tight. Yeah, we like it. The deeper they fall, the better we like it. You know, so anyway, but Clean and Sober definitely had that to it. I don't think my father ever saw Clean and Sober. I think it was gone by then. But it's a good film, and also it's an important film for Alcoholics Anonymous people. You know, they see a lot they identify with, and a lot of people have spoken to me about it.
Yeah, you're amazing. You and Michael Keaton both are just incredible in that film. Tell me about your history in the business, and as you see it, you've been in the business a while. How has it changed for you? As an actor and as an industry in general?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if I'm the right person for it. I came to New York in 1959, so this is 50 years here. You know, I finished college. I'm a Vermonter. I finished college in Northern New York State. I have a degree in marketing, a BBA with a major in marketing. And I just, someplace along the line, and, you know, my family was Irish. My mother's name was Sullivan. And there's that ham, there's that Irish, there's that, you know, thing about it. And when I was graduating from college, the dean of students had me and said, okay, Walsh, you're going to graduate. We can't stop it. But we want you to know you're graduating with the lowest marks of anyone in 7 years. So obviously I was going to be a hell of a businessman, you know. And I could sell. You know, I was going to be able to do whatever I wanted to do.
Right.
And Olivier referred to his mother as having, Laurence Olivier, as having, his mother had the wish, but she never did anything with it. My father definitely had the wish, but he never, you know, he was never able with his background or something. So I inherited the wish. So at that point I said, look, you know, what's the hell being 40 years old, have two or three kids, and wonder if I should have tried this.
Right.
So there was no one to hurt but me at that point. So I came down to New York and, you know, I auditioned and went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts for 2 years, graduated from there in 61. But I just wanted to get it out of the system and not wonder, you know, not look back, you know, wonder if I should have done something. And when I got here, I mean, yeah, I was intelligent. I could, you know, I could understand and appreciate Shaw and Shakespeare and Moliere. But I'd grown up in northern Vermont. I was senior class president in high school, 10 girls and 3 boys. I mean, I come from the big time. I tell people when I got to New York City, I spent 2 years just putting Band-Aids on my knees, falling off curbs, looking at tall buildings. You know. So I got here, but I've been deaf in one ear since the time I was three. That's where a lot of the noise comes from. Deaf people speak louder for fear they're not being heard. And I hadn't heard proper speech, you know, with only one ear, the whole thing growing up in Vermont. And, you know, with the intellectual background I had. But I said things like, "Pepper." And they said, "What?" I said, "Pepper." They said, "What are you saying? What did you want to go and do that for?" "Pepper." And they said, "Holy Moses, fella. You want to do Shaw and Shakespeare movie?" I said, "Well, they understand me at home." So that's where I started. Eventually I had to realize that I wasn't going to do Shaw and Shakespeare and Molière. There were people much better spoken than I. And I had to find out where did I fit, or did I fit, or should I go home? And if people were telling me to go home, I wasn't listening properly. And I just stayed here and, you know, thank God I drank. You know, if I hadn't been a semi-drunk, I don't think I could have made it.
Right.
I don't know what your question was. I think I've done the answer.
That's fine.
Adequate.
Tell me about your approach to acting, though. Does it get any easier for you?
Well, it shouldn't get easier. My approach. I don't know. Curiously enough, you know, I'm a stage actor. That's what I started out to be. I never set out to be a movie actor or a television actor. I'm a stage actor. And that's what I thought I was learning. That's what I learned. And other people work differently. I am what they refer to as a slow study. To get the words out of the way, I have to work like crazy. You know, cat, 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 ran, 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 over, over. You know, I have to drill the damn stuff in. And the talent or the genius or the skills that I have only come after I get rid of all the words. Then I relax enough to the other things happen, you know.
Right.
And that's maybe curious to me. But I have to basically get it out of the way. Then the acting starts in my case. And what I try to do, well, basically it's listening. You have to listen. You have to answer the question. And, you know, you get help. People, directors are supposed to help. And you pick up as much as you can about the character that within the frames of your life or one's life. And then the things that are not, you kind of manufacture or find a substitute for. That's where you end up doing this actor studio and the method and all this other stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And all these little devices and things work. You know, and you use them or not, and you develop a mechanism for how technically how you approach it. No one falls off the turnip truck and does Hamlet.
Right.
It's a lot of hard work that has to go in, and the mother source of everything is the theater. If a person wants to learn the sea. You know, they've been sailing boats for 8,000-10,000 years. You know, if you want to learn to sea, you don't get on a powerboat, you learn to sail.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to learn to act, you learn the stage. And then along the line, if someone comes along, you learning film technique or television technique is just the transference. You know, you say, okay, you got the camera's right in front of your nose. You don't have to fill up, you know, the stadium at Ypsilanti. You know, you learn how to do it. I went and saw the other night. I went and saw South Pacific over here playing at Lincoln Center. You know,
yeah.
And they were all mic'd. And I said, my God, I bet you in 1949, Enzio Pinza and Mary Martin were mic'd. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm thinking, wow. As a matter of fact, it kind of bothered me in its own way.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I answered that question either, but I'm tired of it.
No, you're doing great. One question about the theater. What does it give you that film does not as an actor?
No one comes running down the aisle after the curtain goes up and says, cut, cut. Yeah, let's take it again. Take it again.
Mm.
See, it belongs. Theater is an actor's medium. you know, you do the rehearsal, you've got the playwright, you've got the director, and you spend 3, 4, 5, you're out in Philadelphia, down in Boston or something. You spend your time before you open it. But once that curtain's up, it belongs to the actors. And,
yeah.
You know, doing eight performances, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, something screwed up this afternoon, that night you make sure you get that beat back, that moment back. Movies are, you know, let's take it again. And also, it used to be, and probably still, and they used to say a feature film was 100 minutes long.
Right.
You know, and basically that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the distributor wants the movie to come in, and he wants the people that want to see films to say, well, Meldrew, do you want to go to the 6, the 8, or the 10 o'clock show? They don't want to have the 6 and the 8:14 and the 10:21. They want it basically to fit in an effort so they can sell their Coca-Cola and their popcorn. That's where they're making their real money.
Mm-hmm.
So movies are basically 100 minutes long. And when I started out, they said, okay, you work a 5-day week. You've got 100 minutes. So let's see, 5 into 100 gives you 20. 5 twice, hit. Okay, you've got, I'm trying to think how my math works out here. They wanted 2 minutes a day. They wanted 50 days to shoot a feature film.
Right.
So that would be 10 weeks, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they figured if they got 2 minutes a day out of each day shooting on a film, that ended up in the final cut. They had done a good day's work. So basically, you know, there are days when, you know, you got 3 minutes, maybe, and days when you only got a half a minute. You know, like, and so it was incredibly slow, and it can be incredibly tedious. And it all belongs to the director. It all belongs to the editor. It all belongs after you've done your work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do 5 or 10 takes out of something. I mean, there's a famous story of Liza Minnelli's father, Vincent Minnelli,
mm-hmm.
was notorious for takes. You know, he'd do take after take after take. And I was working one time with Marty Ridd or something, and we were shooting some back roads or something with Tommy Lee Jones. And he just took a take and a take. And I said, well, what can I change? And he said, Vincent Minnelli you'd sit there and you'd do a take. Then he said, we'll do it again, we'll do a take. And he said, you're going crazy. Then at some point, he said, Vincent Minnelli would say, oh, hold it, wait a second. And he said, he's walking over towards you, and you think maybe you're finally going to get something that will help you. And he kind of brushes a little lint off the collar of your shirt. Then he goes back and says, okay, let's take it. And you say, what the heck? And Minnelli would do 60 takes, and then afterwards he'd say, okay, that's it. Put a hold on 60 and print 2. But that's the movie business.
Right.
The actor doesn't really have control of it, really, you know, type of thing.
So you do
good takes, and you look at the film. You look at the one they took, and you say, why did they use that one? You knew you were better on another take.
Mm-hmm. Is it different in certain lower budgeted indie films for you?
Much more so.
Yeah.
I mean, I've shot movies in 10, 12 days, you know, a low budget thing, as opposed to, you know, 50 days or so. It's wet and dirty. Television is wet and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a television script might be 80, 90 pages long or something. I don't know, a television movie. It's got to get all those commercials, and it's not really 50 minutes of every hour. It's not, you know, a lot of commercials. And they go in there, and they got to shoot 8 or 9 or 10 pages a day. And basically, it's like, how do you do a soap opera? How do you do one of those afternoon soaps?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
every day they're doing an hour and a half or something, although the soaps are all dying now. So it's a matter of you do not – in the – I remember Jason Robart saying one of the first movies he did with Yul Brynner. And Jason said he said, I do take after take. He said, finally I was burned out. And he said everything was just – Yul Brynner was just rehearsing, you know. And he said, I thought I was acting. He said, finally, when I'm all tired out, Yul Brynner said, okay, I think I'm ready for one now. And that was the way Jason said. That's the way he was introduced to the movie business.
Wow. So you have Don McKay premiering at Tribeca this Friday the 24th. Is there anything else upcoming that you're excited about?
Excited. I have another film I did with Michael Cera. Is that his name?
Yes. Youth and Revolt?
Yeah, Youth and Revolt. I don't know. I think that's in the fall now. I've shot that already. So that's someplace out there, too. You know, Tribeca. Then we go down with the same film to Dallas, and it opens there in the third or the fourth of at their film festival of May, and supposedly I'm being honored at that film festival. They couldn't get anybody from the A or the B list, so they went down to the C list, and they said, "Get Walsh. He's not dead."
No. We don't feel that way about you.
You're lucky. These aren't photo phones, and I can see what you guys look like. I might really get indignant.
Mr. Walsh, you are absolutely a favorite of ours, and thank you so much for your time. It's so generous.
Okay, well, a copy of this, of course, other than going to the National Archives, will also go to my press agent. Is that right?
that is
correct.
Okay,
yes,
well, it's wonderful.
Yes,
okay, fellas, have a good day back there.
All right, you
thank
too.
You, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow.
That was incredible. That was not as nerve-wracking as I thought it would be.
Oh, he's great.
He was
great.
Awesome. He was great, and I didn't say anything. Yeah, all right, great.
Did you have a question? I mean, he was going on pretty well.
Yeah, he was doing great. I didn't feel, why the hell should I interrupt him? I mean, I think I got some stuff in early on, but why the hell, you know, why stop that, you know?
Right. Oh, he's wonderful. And these credits, man. I mean, I asked about Cletus Soberman. You know, there's Blade Runner. And there's Blood Simple. And he spoke a little bit of that. You just watch Blood Simple, and he is so simple, and yet so menacing.
Yes, he is.
But he's not playing menacing.
Mm-hmm.
It just comes through organically, I guess, given that material.
Mm-hmm.
Emmett Walsh. Good deal.
Yeah.
Okay, a little bit later in the show, we'll be welcoming Robert Hall, director Robert Hall, to the show. His new movie is called Late to Rest. But right now, Jerry.
Yes.
Very special treat.
We have the original Chris.
The original Chris is here with us. Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, well, I haven't heard that voice in a long time.
I know. You need to go take a nap after talking to Emmett Walsh?
No, I'm fine, dude. We want to talk to you.
No, I just mean that guy's a firecracker. I'd need a little nap after interviewing him.
He's great. You know what? I called him, and I was telling Jerry this. I called him to remind him of the show. I spent like 2 minutes on the phone with him, and in those 2 minutes, he managed to call me a prick.
Yeah,
and it was great.
I've
never enjoyed being called that name before in my life.
Yeah, he seems like a guy that's got a real joie de vivre.
Yeah,
he even got a little jab in at you, like with his tone of voice at the end there when you asked him, "Is there anything else you're excited about?" He's like, "Excited."
Yeah. I figured after like the first couple things, I said, "Why the hell even start with this guy? I just keep my mouth shut," you know?
Right. He's wonderful. But after you've done 200 movies and some of the best of the past 30 years.
I thought it was 106.
106 movies, but he's got 200 credits, apparently.
Well, no, that's true. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think it might be more than 106, but,
I'm not going to argue with him. He said he only had three. I'm not going to argue with him. I mean.
No. So, Chris, how are you, my friend? How's schooling going and everything?
I'm doing great. School is going great. It's winding down, so it's pretty much
that's
over.
Great.
Yeah.
So I'll actually be able to see you occasionally.
That's right, yeah. Not only will you be able to see me, but the rest of my family will be able to see me. Everyone else that I've been neglecting for the past years, including the show, whenever it wants to see me.
All the time.
Well, that makes me, that warms the cockles of my heart to hear that.
Oh, my God, I can't believe you said that.
No, it's winding down, and I'm doing great, so I'm very excited that it's over, and I'm excited to be talking to you guys again.
Likewise.
Your lovely, lovely, sexy voices.
Oh, my God, okay.
Oh, yes. Jerry, have you seen anything this weekend? You normally see every
movie. I know. I see everything. That's such a lie, but it's true.
Did you see 17 again for the first time?
No, I saw State of Play, and I didn't see 17 again for the 17th time, but I did see State of Play.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I like Russell Crowe in it a lot, and I do like Ben Affleck. I really liked him in Hollywoodland, but there is an argument to be made that Ben Affleck can't hold his own against Russell Crowe.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people are like touting this movie as a really smart thriller, and in a year where three smart thrillers have been shot down at the box office because in the end they're not really smart, the international duplicity in this, or maybe too smart for their own good, I think you should go see it for Russell Crowe.
Yeah,
I think he's phenomenal in it. I think the rest of the movie is so convoluted. And one of the reasons I see that it's convoluted is because of Tony Gilroy is one of the co-writers on it. And as much as I love Tony Gilroy, he made Duplicity like too smart, too many reversals for its own good. And the last half hour of this movie, it just keeps going. You know, they keep like twisting things, reversing things with the characters. And you're just like, come on, I don't even care at this point. Just end the movie or when I think it's going to end. But it's an interesting film. I don't think it's a bad film. I mean, people said, oh, because the trailer looks so good. And I was like, I thought the trailer was really lackluster, so I wasn't really expecting much to begin with, to be very honest with you. So it was all right. But it's really for Russell. I'd go see it for Russell Crowe more than anyone else.
Right. Russell Crowe is terrific. He was terrific in Body of Lies, which was another.
He was one of the, you know, he and Mark Strong and DiCaprio, like, and that's another movie. The performances are good, but the movie itself is, I think, very hollow, but the performances are very good.
Yeah, they are. Chris, you've stayed away because of schooling. You haven't been able to go to the movies that often.
No. The last time I got to go to the movies actually was over the Christmas break. But Body of Lies is something I wanted to see. And I keep up, although I don't get to go to the movies. You know, I'm on the websites every day, and I read all the new news and everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm up to date on what's going on with movies.
Right.
But, you know, the truth is, the beginning of the year till now, really, what have I missed?
I can tell you. I can tell you what's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I that's the thing. I know what's good. I read everything, and there just hasn't been much. Like,
no,
there really hasn't been anything that's even tempted me. I can't say that's true. I mean, I'd like to see State of Play, but you know, at the same time, I keep hearing people give it a review like you just gave, Jerry, or even the people that are even more excited about it than you are, it's good, but there's always a little coda at the end of the review, like, but, you know, nothing special. Like,
right.
So I feel like
now,
I can wait.
Have you read, speaking of Tribeca as we were earlier, obviously the opening movie is Wednesday, I believe, the 22nd, which is the new Woody Allen movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading raves about it. I've been reading that it's very funny.
Really?
Yes.
Really, because Keith Ulick told us that he's been hearing it's bad.
That's the only person I've ever heard it being bad from.
Okay.
And he said that his colleagues said that it was Curse of the Jade Scorpion bad. I've read like three or four of the major newspaper critics, and they've all said this is one of his funniest movies.
Okay.
And that Larry David is the perfect reflection of him, but still Larry David.
Well, that's even better.
Yeah.
There's a great article, an interview with Woody Allen and Larry David. The New Yorker, I believe.
Okay.
And out of the two of them, Larry David is the more optimistic personality. Well, that says something. But apparently it's very funny and ultimately very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's ultimately very emotional, which is great, which is a turn that Woody Allen's been taking more and more.
Right.
Which I think is wonderful. Are there any news stories that have captured you guys' attention lately? Don't everybody speak at once?
I know. I'm just trying to think what would be... Could you,
I think one of the more interesting stories for me personally in the last couple weeks was the leak of the unfinished Wolverine movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys talked about that on the show or not.
No, we haven't talked about it, no.
Right.
I didn't watch it, of course, not because I have morals, just because I don't give a fuck about a Wolverine movie.
I wouldn't watch it. I'd rather just see it in the theater. I just really don't really care to watch an unfinished cut of a movie like that.
No,
I don't
do
feel like sitting on my computer and watching it, to be honest with you.
I agree with that statement, too, but also, you know.
I know you don't give a shit about Hugh Jackman's abs and his Wolverine.
Well, listen to this. A critic got fired over it, the Fox News critic, Friedman.
Well, they didn't fire him. He's a prick.
It was back and forth. Did they finally fire him or what?
Well, he'll say one thing, they'll say a different thing. But ultimately, he got fired right after he posted a review based upon the leaked videos. So put
right.
one and one he, together.
It was
he doesn't have his job anymore.
Right. And Warner Brothers, whoever's coming out with it, is it Fox?
Fox.
They're privately predicting between $70 to $75 million opening. So the big question is, will this leak affect Wolverine's ultimate box office? I mean, that's
no,
the bread and butter.
Absolutely not. Absolutely
no, not at
not
all.
Anyway.
Not at all.
No. First of all, it wasn't finished, from what I understand, like I said, I didn't see it, but from what I understand, it was very obvious that it wasn't finished. A movie
mm-hmm.
like that, when the effects are not finished on a movie like that, it's obvious. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're watching
yeah.
it, and there's big, you know, like blank screens where there's supposed to be an explosion, and, you know, he's just slashing people with hands that don't have claws on them and things like this. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how they
take these things.
And there's
also probably no
things.
Finished score, too, which is usually
right.
the last thing to get done.
Right. No finished score, no finished script. Oh, wait, it's going to be released like that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
wow.
Yeah.
Don't you like the X-Men movies? I mean, I thought that you were an X-Men fan.
No, I was a comic book fan, and I did like the first two X-Men movies.
But the third one just, like, made you nauseous.
The third one was, it didn't make me nauseous, I just thought it was pretty bad, you know, just generally a bad movie. And also, you know, come on, what do we need? Do we need another one? Like,
well, as
much as I like the first two X-Men movies, just like how many do we need? How many Transformers movies are we going to need eventually? You know.
Yeah, but it's like this is the first of like a whole prequel trilogy of X-Men films, from what I've read.
If this
yeah,
one makes money, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want to do all kinds of origin stories and stuff. But you know, come on, are we talking
yeah.
about what are we talking about here? Like a guy who has
seems really like. Scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, like, I mean, essentially what's going to happen, we haven't seen the movie, and I don't want to judge it, and I don't want to sound like, you know, there's no way it could be good, but, you know, come on. Like,
essentially you're saying there's no way it can be good.
I'm just trying to figure out how Danny Houston becomes Brian Cox. That's what I'm trying to figure out. But
that's the one thing I will say about the Wolverine movie, and about lots of one of the reasons I end up seeing a lot of these movies, even though I shouldn't, is because they do get some really good actors, Hugh Jackman included. You know,
yeah.
like really, really good actors. Danny Houston, you know, guys like Ryan Reynolds, who I think is really talented.
Yeah,
they draw them into these movies. So maybe, you know, I hope I'm wrong.
I feel the same way about Bruckheimer films. He's able to get these. He's always been able to get these actors that rarely do that genre film, but they trust him with it.
His casts are incredible. Like,
yeah, they are.
Every time out, they're incredible.
Yeah.
Like even to the movie, you could pick like the least impressive Bay cast. You know, if it's something like The Island, you know, which was a throwaway movie, but even that cast is, you know, you got good actors like Ewan McGregor. And Steve Buscemi and Scarlett Johansson. Like, he attracts really, really good people. Sean Bean.
Con Air, Malkovich. You got Malkovich in an action genre film. And
John Cusack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And when I see John Cusack, I think action.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a man of action. I love John Cusack, as we all do.
We all do, yes.
Wolverine is May 1st. That's pretty much opening the summer. So let's go down the list of some of these summer movies while we're all three together. This
uh-huh.
is a good time to get our takes on the prospects for these movies.
Let's do it.
May is major.
You want me to get my Entertainment Weekly out now, or are you?
No, I've got it up.
Okay.
May is major in a way that previous Mays have not been. I think
right.
every weekend holds the promise of a real big blockbuster hit. Whether or not they're good films, that's another thing. But the very next week on May 8th, by all accounts, this movie works from
mm-hmm.
all the screenings I've read of Star Trek.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams.
I think it will be the first good Star Trek movie since probably the original, like this, like part six or something.
That's interesting because I think it'll be the first good Star Trek movie.
You don't think the ones with your... No, I like some, like, come on, I like two I love. I love Wrath of Khan, and I love The Undiscovered Country.
Hmm.
But you think it's going to be the first good Star Trek... I mean, it will be better than all of them for one simple reason. J.J. Abrams. J.J. Abrams made the first good, really good Mission Impossible movie. He understood it was a TV show. He knows TV. If anyone could make a great Star Trek movie, it's J.J. Abrams because he understands the mastery of film and television.
I don't agree with you about the Mission Impossible bit, but I do agree with you about what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I do think the third Mission Impossible for me may be the... I mean, let me put it to you like this, Chris. Of Mission Impossible, I just don't think there, any of them are great films, but
mm-hmm.
that one was the most pleasing of them to me.
I think De Palma was perfect, but I do like Mission Impossible 3 a lot.
Yeah. He is a really, really exciting filmmaker. And
yeah.
not just filmmaker, but just exciting entertainer. Like it does
yeah.
seem like everything he touches turns to gold.
Yeah, it does.
Well, here's the litmus test, and I think that you and Jerry have both spoken to it. Chris, like me, you are not a Trekkie.
No,
a Trekkie.
Not at all.
I'm not really a Trekkie. I just like the movies. I've never really watched. The shows were a little bit too PC for me.
Yeah, but Jerry enjoys the movies a lot more than you and I do.
Mm-hmm.
So if it has enough in it to satisfy the non-fans and the fans alike, that's the criteria here
mm-hmm.
for a smash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the grosses for the previous Star Trek films, they're based on people like, go see that movie anyway. This could
mm-hmm.
bring in a lot of new blood if it's tailored towards us.
You and I and Jerry, we're movie fans, so we understand that this is a reboot. We understand that this is an entirely new cast, that they're taking the story
mm-hmm.
from the very beginning, that this is young Captain Kirk, not William Shatner. It's not going to have Baldy.
A lot of overacting.
Patrick Stewart. A lot of overacting and then a bunch of cheesy effects. We understand that. Do you think that the mass audiences at large are going to understand that?
Mm.
And get excited in the way that you and I are.
I actually think they are, because what I like about J.J. Abrams is he really, I think, while he does respect the Trekkie wishes, at the same time, he's really not interested in what they think. He's not making a movie like Zack Snyder's Watchmen. I got to respect the fanboys. He says, I understand the fanboys have their interest in everything, but when you make a movie, you're making a movie for everyone. You're not
right.
making it for one segment of the population.
Yeah. Here, here. Anyone that wants to call in, I'm sorry, Chris, anyone that wants to call in, the number is 718-508-9477. Give us a call if you want to join in the conversation. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I agree with you completely, Jerry. What I'm saying, though, is I feel like people like my girlfriend, for instance, who is not a Star Trek fan,
mm-hmm.
and unlike you and I, like, I can agree with you. I think Wrath of Khan is a pretty good movie. You know,
yeah.
I actually think – I thought Undiscovered Country was a pretty good movie, too.
Right.
I really like that movie, actually.
Right.
And that's me. She's a person who never liked any Star Trek movies, doesn't give a shit about Star Trek. When
I can understand
preview,
that, too.
When we saw the preview for this new Star Trek movie, her reaction essentially was, Star Trek. Like,
yeah.
she didn't have to – she didn't get to, oh, they recast this young guy who looks – you know, like a young Captain Kirk and is supposedly a pretty good actor and really good in the role. She didn't even get that far. And, you know, like, same thing with Spock and same thing with all these other characters and the special effects. Didn't get that far.
Right.
It was like, Star Trek, don't give a shit. Like, you know. Like,
no, that's – and I understand that perfectly. I mean, I can definitely understand that.
All right. Do we care about – do we give an S about the movie coming out a week later, the sequel to Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons?
I fell asleep during the Da Vinci Code. I couldn't keep my eyes open the first half hour. It's okay. I didn't know. I mean, it's big money, obviously, for Opie Cunningham, but and Tom Hanks.
Look at you. That is a smarmy, dismissive thing to refer to for Ron Howard.
I love Opie Cunningham. I love Ron Howard. I saw him on Bill Maher. I don't think he was ever better.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was great.
I do like him, and I actually think this has the potential, because everyone who's read – I've only read the Da Vinci Code. I never read – the Angels and Demons is actually the first one.
Mm-hmm, right.
But
they're treating it like a sequel.
They are treating it like a sequel. All right, I'm now in the host queue. Angels and Demons is, by all accounts, a much better book than The Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
So I think it has the potential to be very good.
Well, it's a lot more action-packed. It's a lot less reliant on endless exposition, apparently.
I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, people seem to like Da Vinci Code, didn't they?
Oh, they love their books.
Didn't that make like $600 million worldwide or
yes,
something like
did.
That?
It did very well. So it's going to.
You know what though? It's one of those movies. It's one of those movies that grosses a bungload of money. But I've rarely heard anyone say that they liked it.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like
yeah.
I don't think it matters. Like it's
yeah.
one of these movies that no matter how many people you hear say it sucks, no matter how many bad reviews, people are going to go see it anyway. It's a big.
Yeah.
It's a big, supposedly intelligent movie with a you know an awesome movie star. Don't get me wrong. I love Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
But I just think it's going to make money. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is more than any other movie, actually. I think the argument could be made this summer. This movie's going to make money, period.
Oh, yeah.
So this is how crowded this May is. Then on Thursday, the 21st, Terminator Salvation. And, Chris, you're hyped about this movie now.
I'm very hyped.
I'm extremely hyped. You know what? Like... I've got a love-hate relationship with movie trailers because for years I've been screaming and jumping up and down about movie trailers that give too much away.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a well-cut movie trailer that gives just enough away
mm-hmm.
and has the right music to get you pumped and excited and shows you just enough, gives you the perfect little taste, can be really, really magical and, like, really get me excited.
Yeah.
And that's what the last trailer for Terminator Salvation did. I mean, I was somewhat interested. I saw the Terminator 3 movie. Didn't hate it, didn't love it. But so I heard they were making Part 4. I'm interested. We'll see what happens. And then this preview came out, and I was like, oh, shit. I'm, like, calling all my friends, you know, when they come over. I'm like, dude, you got to watch this preview. Like, it looks badass.
It's
really
incredible. I would actually have to say, as much as I want to see Public Enemies and Inglourious Basterds, when I saw the trailer for Salvation, everything else sort of, and especially in the month of May, everything else falls by the wayside.
This is the biggest draw for me for the month of May.
Yeah,
yeah, I will say that. You know, and Mick G, if he can pull this off, because he has been royally attacked by all the fanboys of this movie.
He should be. And
unfairly,
and he shouldn't be. I would actually recommend everybody in our chat room and everyone go read the interview with him in the latest issue of Fast Company. This guy knows what he's doing.
Fast Company? What?
Fast Company. It's a business magazine, my friend. Business and technology magazine. Read the interview with him. It will change. If you have a negative opinion of him, it will change after reading.
Well, not only is he a cool guy, but people
yeah.
make comparisons to Michael Bay and Brett Ratner, and that's totally unfair. He made the two Charlie's Angels movies, both of which I'm going to come out of the closet here and say I thought were pretty good. Like I don't know what everybody's talking about. Like I thought they were really entertaining, well-made movies, and I enjoyed both of them.
Yeah.
And then We Are Marshall is completely different world, also
mm-hmm.
really fucking well made. Like,
yeah.
really good. He pulled good performance out of Matthew McConaughey, and we know how difficult that is.
it is, dude.
Oh,
right.
We miss you, Chris.
Yeah. No, but, I mean, I don't, you know, people go after, I can see the Brett Ratner, I can see even the Michael Bay thing, but McGee has done something here with these movies that, I think he could even make – this movie seems like it could challenge even your opinions of the original film, the first two films. It looks that good.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
yeah.
he could give Cameron a run for his money.
I think it'll be a good movie.
Yeah.
I'll go that far.
Supposedly it's got an ending that's a little bit – I didn't read – as soon as I read the beginning of the article and it mentioned that it might be a little spoilery, I stopped reading, but
mm-hmm.
apparently it's got an ending that might challenge people a little bit.
Does the world end in a solar flare?
Oh, shit. Nicolas Cage is in this? Fuck.
All right. You know where the criticism started of Mick G? His name is Mick G. The next day, Friday, May 22nd, I mean the next day, Night at the Museum, the sequel, Battle of the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be huge. I mean, the kids are going to flock.
The kids are going to flock.
I did catch the first one on, you know, it's a good family movie. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, there is nothing wrong with it. Actually, I thought it was pretty funny, too. And this one's got some new actors. Bill Hader is in it, who is fast becoming one of these guys that I keep saying to myself, where is Bill Hader's movie all to himself? Because that's gonna happen soon enough.
He deserves it. And the only director who's willing to give him a lot of screen time is Greg Mamola with Adventureland and Superbad.
Mm-hmm.
And Adventureland, I think, is the best movie of the year.
Then the next week, it only has a week to get all those kids into it, because the next Friday, Drag Me to Hell comes out. No, I'm just kidding. Drag Me to Hell does come out. Up, Disney Pixar, Up.
What can you say about a new Disney Pixar movie except I'll be there and it will be really good? You know?
Yeah.
And from what I've heard, it is really good. And the point of controversy on this movie, apparently, is its ending. It apparently has a devastating ending. But Bambi died in a fire. Bambi's mom died in a fire, right? Is that what happened? I never watched this movie.
I thought she was shot by a hunter. Okay.
Was she shot?
Shot,
I believe.
Yeah, man. Yeah, she was shot, man.
And then they
shot
burned her? Where does the fire come in?
Burned.
Yeah, then it was
shot and saved. Burned and then thrown in the river.
Ate her? Yeah. Anyway, are we looking forward to Drag Me to Hell?
Sam Raimi returning to horror. It's got to be better than any of the horror films I've seen the last couple of years. I mean,
they're saying it might get a slot in Cannes.
Yeah.
Really?
At the midnight. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, like, that's saying something about him as a filmmaker, with Cannes, the snootiest festival in the world. Well, maybe not the snootiest anymore. There's some other pretty snooty ones, but
I think Toronto might be pretty snooty. I mean,
yeah. But anyway, they're going to let an American filmmaker show his horror movie, his very tongue-in-cheek-looking horror movie, at midnight at the Cannes Film Festival. That's pretty cool.
That is.
It's about time, too.
And Cannes also, obviously, Inglourious Basterds is going to be a big draw there. So we'll hear pretty soon what that movie is going to be, how well-received that one's going to be. And they're about to announce, I think this week they'll announce their competition films.
Cool.
Coppola pulled out his movie. He pulled it out because he wasn't ready with it yet. Yeah.
Well, he's got a long history of pulling out. So.
Friday, June 5th. I think this will tank. I hate to say that, but Land of the Lost.
I just want to see him beat up Matt Lauer in the movie.
You think it will? You think it'll tank?
You really think it will tank?
I don't think it'll do as well as hoped.
Well, you made a very accurate prediction last year about which movie will tank, although I don't think you were the only one that was predicting that, but you were dead on balls accurate, as Marissa Tomei would say.
About what? Love Guru?
Yes, about Love Guru.
Yeah. I think it's this year's Love Guru.
Really? Okay. No, I mean, I don't know what to expect out of it because, I mean, I like Will Ferrell, but it does seem like and I like Danny McBride a lot, but it just seems like it just seems really forced.
Do we know what it's rated? Has it gotten a rating yet?
No.
Because it's interesting that I mean, it is Land of Lost. This is a family show. This was a what was their what was the production? The old TV show. Who made that? Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember. But those people are
Sid and Marty
now.
Croft, right? Marty.
Yes, exactly. Sid and Marty Croft. I mean, it's an old family show. And then they cast Will Ferrell, who can do family stuff, and he can also do some pretty blue stuff. And Danny McBride. Danny McBride is not exactly a family-friendly star, so I'm very curious what tonally what the movie's going to be like.
Right.
Even the trailer, I really hate to say the first movie that comes to mind is the Journey to the Center of the Earth in 3D.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Friday, June 12th, we have The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Does Tony Scott deliver for you, Chris?
Not in a while. not in a long while. I mean, I enjoy watching a Tony Scott movie, and I see the movies that he makes that come out, but it's been a while since a Tony Scott movie was pretty memorable for me. I'd have to say True Romance, actually.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man.
Or Crimson Tide, but that's
or, the or Man on Fire. Man on Fire, I'd say.
Yeah, I was not nuts about Man on Fire the way I was about Crimson Tide, and but I didn't hate it. But that's
right.
The thing. He can make a movie like Crimson Tide. He can make a movie like True Romance if he's got good actors. And he seems to have good actors in this. Hopefully the script is good. You know, the original is an excellent movie. We'll see. The preview didn't blow my skirt up, but I don't know. It looks like it could go either way. Why?
Yeah.
What are you thinking, Jerry?
To be very honest with you, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the original. It still holds up, and I like Denzel Washington, Travolta. Maybe this is like him making penance for Battlefield Earth, but I don't really see a reason to remake this. But, I mean, I'll go see it, but it's not high on my list of things to see this summer.
I do kind of want John Travolta to have a hit. I kind of feel bad. You know, it would suck if, like, his next movie after his son passes away, you know.
No, that's true. No, I understand that.
And he's a good guy, and he's had his ups and downs. He's working a lot. I think that's all he's concerned about. He will have a big hit with whatever that Old Dogs is, you know.
Yeah.
And he's had big hits in recent past.
Yeah.
But the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, I'll watch it. I don't expect any fireworks, but
no, it would do well that weekend. There's no doubt about that. I think it's
going up against Moon in limited release. So it's not really going up against
it. Yeah,
it's
really not going against Moon. I mean,
and in Eddie Murphy, which, you know, if I had a movie, I'd put it up against Moon. That's intolerably slow for me, that movie. Imagine that, the Eddie Murphy family movie. It's going up against that.
It's hard to believe this guy made Trading Places at one time or 48 Hours.
But he's about to play. Who's he about to play? Richard Pryor, right?
He's
going to
play Richard Pryor. Wow.
That's funny too, because he already played him in the movie Delirious.
Right.
True.
This will be a very too dramatic effect, apparently. Apparently, he's not getting paid at all to do this little indie Richard Pryor movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's where he belongs.
They've been trying to get that off the ground for a long time.
Yeah, I know. What's his name was trying to do it. I can't think of his name.
The actor Mike Epps was originally.
Eddie Griffith.
Yeah.
Eddie Griffith. Yeah. Friday, June 19th, we're back with Woody Allen's movie in limited release, romantic comedy with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds, The Proposal. That'll bring all the women in. And then, Chris, you'll be forced to see that weekend. And then
my girlfriend is actually next to me right now saying yes and throwing her fist in the air because she's...
Year One, the new Reitman movie. Jack
Black. Is it Reitman or Harold Ramis? Who's the...
It's Ramis. Thank you.
Okay. Do we think this is good? I mean, I don't know. This is a big, big question mark because you have the director and writer of the really great subversive comedies with this new breed, you know, Michael Cera and Jack Black, who are really the stars of some of these newer ones, and it's like the two generations coming together. I don't know if it's going to work. I just don't know.
Yeah, it does seem like the kind of movie that could easily get swallowed up with such stiff competition around it. Although I think the preview's, you know, really funny. I don't know. It seems like maybe the kind of humor that could get lost on people, that could go over people's heads.
It could be like Nacho Libre.
Yeah, I think that was that supposed to be humor, actually?
Yeah, I know, but I didn't laugh that much during as much as I thought I would. But it could be like that.
Jack Black gets a bad rap sometimes, though, and partially due to his own choices. But I listened to the Tenacious D album the other day, and as I was listening to it, I was reminded that he's a really talented guy, and he can be very, very funny when you think movies like Orange County or School of Rock, some of his earlier movies. Keep in mind, the guy has only been on the scene a couple years. He really hasn't been around, probably approaching 10 years that we've even known who the hell he is.
Yeah, that's true.
He was making little movies before that, but only...
He had bit parts. I mean, he had, we're talking about a minute or 2 minutes of screen time, but the first I remember, his High Fidelity was the first that I remember hearing about him.
Yeah, exactly.
The next week, I think it was 10 days later, is the 4th of July weekend beginning Wednesday the 1st, and we have Ice Age, the Dawn of the Dinosaurs, so an Ice Age sequel for the family, and Public Enemies, Is this your number one, Chris? I would think that it would be.
In summertime, you mean, or this
yes.
year? Yeah,
in summertime.
Oh, absolutely. For summertime movies, I couldn't be more excited, actually, that it's got a summertime release. It's gonna be, I think it's going to be like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, the weekend of summer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The big weekend.
Yeah, the big weekend, and there's another elephant in the room for that weekend, actually. And, of course, I'm talking about Transformers 2. Don't they come out on the same day?
Well, a couple of days before, but I have to tell you, don't you
Does
think,
it really? Where's Transformers 2?
I think it says the 26th or the 24th or something. But, Chris, with the other film that we're looking forward to, Terminator, doesn't that sort
Excuse
of
me.
Just make Transformers look really retarded at this point?
I'll tell you what, Jerry.
I know you hated the first one, but with this movie, doesn't it just make you think that, it's embarrassing that this film comes after Terminator Salvation. It's really embarrassing when I see the trailer now.
Well, it's
so
funny that
should
you
it come out now? Go ahead.
Well, wasn't there a little bit of war of the words between Michael Bay and McGee about didn't Michael Bay make some sort of comment like people are essentially ripping off what he's trying to do? Like he's the first guy that thought of monsters ripping apart planets and stuff. Like
he should go tell
it
to Toho Studios.
yeah.
I'm sorry, Transformers 2 comes out June 24th, a full week before Public Enemies. It's on a Wednesday. And we have the producer of Transformers 2 on Wednesday night, by the way.
Okay.
Which I have an interesting story. There's an interesting story. This is a legendary producer. His name is Don Murphy.
Don Murphy's on Natural Born Killers.
Yes, yeah. And I asked him if he was nervous about Transformers 2, and he said, no, it delivers. People will get what they pay for. I was like, all right.
Well, he's right there.
Okay.
And Chris can say whatever he wants after that.
No, I will keep it short and say that I will not be going to see it. That's all. That's all I'm going to say about it. And I'm basically just not going to be able to talk about it with you guys because I always go to the beach with my family that week, and we usually go to see a movie. My family all went and saw Transformers with me a couple years ago when it came out.
I remember
we were
that.
I remember that show.
Yeah, we were actually talking about it a couple weeks ago, and they were saying, well, what are we going to go see on July 4th weekend? And I was like, well, Transformers 2 comes out, and then Public Enemies also is going to be out around that time. So, and they were like, Transformers 2, so they're all going to be going to see that. And I said, if you want to take bite number two out of that shit sandwich, then you can be my guest. But I'm going to be in the little theater at the end of the hallway watching Public Enemies.
Oh, it won't be so little. Not with that cast, dude. It's going to be just...
I hope so.
I know you're joking, brother, but I mean...
I hope you're right.
Public Enemies will be... I don't think you could pick a better time to release that movie, a better year.
Doesn't it look excellent? Isn't
yeah.
the look of the movie so surprising? I mean, we've been hearing about him making it for a while, and it was a really exciting announcement when he said he was going to make it and the cast and everything. But the look of the movie looks really fantastic. Visually.
Another crime saga. And you and I talk about this, Chris. No one's better with atmosphere. No one's the feel of his movies. Like, you can live in them. It's going to be astounding, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an ultimate crime story. It's a great crime story.
It's what he does best.
When I heard that Depp was going to play Dillinger, at first I thought, well, Johnny Depp doesn't seem, big enough. I don't mean physically big enough, but I just mean personality-wise big enough. But then I sort of reminded myself, he can get into a part and sort of expand himself like a sponge to fit whatever part it is he's cast in. And he's done it time and again, even when I don't like it in something like a Pirates movie. He can really fulfill and deliver. And when I saw the preview, he really seems to have this quality that is perfect for John Dillinger. So I'm getting really excited about this.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The following week on Friday, July 10th, we have Bruno.
Well, I mean, right there, you said it all with, Chris's laugh there. I mean, I can't wait to see what he does, what this is going to be. I mean, it will be unique.
Apparently, it has more staged stuff than Borat, which, if it's funny, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
And by all accounts, it's hysterical. from what I've heard.
I laughed my ass off watching the 2-minute preview.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm there. I'm completely sold. You know, I mean, he could really make anything, and I'd go see it because I think he's that talented.
Yeah.
But it does look funny. I can't wait for that Ron Paul interview.
Yeah, that's gonna be great.
Yeah, I laugh every time he like takes off in the motorcycle with the baby in his lap.
Yeah,
in that the trailer. That's gonna be funny. More controversy. It just got an R rating. They trimmed it a bit to get an R.
Mm-hmm.
You think controversy will follow it?
Oh,
I don't know. I mean,
absolutely. Yes.
Manufactured controversy, sure, but I don't.
Well, do you expect as many lawsuits as what came out of Borat?
No,
I don't know if there'll be as many lawsuits, but I mean, even in the preview, you can see that it touches on racial issues, it touches on sexual issues. Like it's gonna turn some stomachs, I'm sure. but the difference is, I think that there will be a lot of people that stay away from it, probably because of the whole. You know, I mean, Americans will very happily go to see a movie making fun of a foreigner, but when the main character is clearly so flamboyantly gay, I think that will probably turn a lot of male audience members off. Not myself. I love to see gay people made fun of, but...
you know, they say that you watch scenes from this movie and you absolutely don't know how he got out of it alive.
Yeah, is this the last movie he can make like this? I mean, I can't imagine him like being able to do these kind of movies because everyone's got. I mean, more people got to know who he is and everything.
Well, we said that after Borat too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the two characters side by side. He really is such a chameleon. I mean, people have made comparisons with him to Peter Sellers, and I think they're accurate.
I think that's very accurate.
Right.
If you look at the Borat character standing next to the Bruno character and then standing next to the Ali G character, that's just the three characters that he's famous for. I can't help but believe he's capable of coming up with an infinite amount of characters that are just as good.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I'm very curious.
Vying for the same audience as Bruno, 5 days later, is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
That will be enormous. But I mean, that's another thing. That'll be big. Like, let me put it to you like this: the theater where we see it at, that was showing on 13 screens for a midnight screening. All 13 screens, all of them were sold out for the last Harry Potter film.
Now, has that had a summer release before? Any of those films?
Yes. The last one and the one before that one had summer releases, and dude, they're. On the opening weekend, at least, they're enormous business.
Yeah. We got a call. Let's take a call real quick. We have a couple of minutes. OSLCX, you're on the line.
Welcome.
All right. He's not on the line anymore.
A cyborg from Terminator Salvation we're talking to?
Yeah.
Welcome. Sorry, I didn't hear you, or your phone wasn't connected. Okay, then we have to wait, let's see, Friday, July 24th, romantic comedy The Ugly Truth, which actually at the latest Show West show, industry thingamajig, they showed clips from The Ugly Truth and everybody was buzzing about it.
Okay.
Surprisingly enough.
Mm-hmm. That's with Gerard Butler, right?
Yeah, and Katherine Heigl.
Mm-hmm.
And also a movie called G-Force, a Jerry Bruckheimer animated film, I think. It's animated live action.
Is this the one with the guinea pigs?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God. All right. I guess it's the Space Chimps for this summer. Okay.
With Bruckheimer, it'll probably do a little bit better than Space Chimps. But and then Funny People on July 31st.
I think that has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it could, but how about that preview? This is the kind of preview I was talking about earlier.
It
right.
gives away the whole movie.
It gives away literally, I mean, I can't believe that there, first of all, it was like a 3.5-minute trailer.
Yeah.
And it just gives away, it goes, I can't help but think, chronologically through the movie and essentially gives away all the major plot points,
mm-hmm.
Gives away, shows many of the emotional peaks of the movie, and it's just too much. Like,
yeah, I agree, Chris. I mean,
less is more with a preview, especially when you've got a movie that's got so many characters and so many different emotional turns. Less is more. They're giving away too much with these previews. Mm-hmm. After I was done watching it, I was like, well, I don't need to see it now.
Yeah.
I know everything
it's a show. I do feel like you're right. It does feel like I'm watching the whole film right there.
Yeah. That said,
yeah.
Judd Apatow, you know, I mean, I do agree with you. I think it's got potential to be a really, really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I hope Adam Sandler is very good in it, because we know he can be and often is not, but he's certainly capable of it.
I think this could be something more in the line of Punch Drunk Love and Rain Over Me. I definitely think this could be along those lines.
I think it could just as easily be Spanglish.
Is that you really think so? Okay.
I think you're right, Jamie. I think the movie has that kind of feel to the trailer, and I'm not saying that Spanglish is a bad movie, or that Adam Sandler was not very good in it. I think he was, and I liked him in it.
Yeah.
But it just sort of disappeared. It's not exactly the most memorable movie.
No, it's not. It was disappointing, I thought. But
Friday, August 7th. Well, we're dying down from the summer excitement, but not before we get the G.I. Joe movie in there.
Was that necessary? Was it necessary to make a G.I. Joe movie?
They hadn't made one, so yes.
I guess so. I mean, August belongs to Tarantino.
We haven't gotten there yet, dude.
I'm just going to say that. August belongs to Inglourious Bastards.
Steven Sommers, the director of the Mummy films. It's a big...
I know, it's an enormous deal. I mean,
Steven Sommers, Dennis Quaid movie. So, come on.
What part does Dennis Quaid play? He's not playing Gordo Cooper, obviously, so who's he playing?
General Hawk.
Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my God, how the mighty have fallen.
And here's counter-program. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in the movie playing Cobra Commander. I will say that I was a huge G.I. Joe fan when I was a wee lad, and so there is a little piece of me that's kind of excited to see what they do with it. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt recently said that he signed on to the movie just when he saw the concept art for the Cobra Commander character. He was so excited about playing that part that he signed on without reading the script, just on the concept art. So.
Well, he's a good enough actor, I think, and if he's playing the villain, that could be right there. I mean, enough to make the movie like really good. So.
Yeah, I agree. I like him a lot.
And here's counter-programming for you. The same day, Julie and Julia.
That's supposed to be really good.
Yeah. Nora Ephron, Meryl Streep playing Julia Child. Which I'm excited about seeing that Meryl Streep.
No, I think that looks really good. So, I mean, yeah.
That
is could
there
be
anything,
the intelligent women's movie. Yeah.
Is there anything she can make that you really... won't see just sight unseen, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel about her. It doesn't really matter what she makes. I'll pretty much watch it sight unseen because she's that good.
Friday, August 14th, the new Ang Lee movie taking Woodstock, and the trailer just came out for that the other week. What do we think of that? This is odd. I mean, this is what's special about Ang Lee. His attempts at tackling Americana, like uniquely American subjects and settings.
I think this is he's definitely, you know, he can do anything. I can't see why he can't do this. I mean, he can do anything.
Yeah.
Well, like a lot of Ang Lee movies, he is such a versatile guy.
Yeah.
And really, really talented. I agree. But the question is, can it be good? You know, not can it be popular? Because really, can it be popular? Can this movie be, you know, a hit? It's hard for me to believe that people are interested in seeing something like that. You know, I'm interested in seeing it, and certainly there are people that are interested in seeing it. I mean, mass audiences.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you go that way, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, The Ice Storm was not a mass. None of his, Brokeback Mountain wasn't Crouching Tiger, but a lot of his films, no. I mean, they're not.
Yeah. No, but it does look good, and the actor Dimitri Martin, who's actually not even an actor, he's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
He has a show on Comedy Central, which is very, very funny. So I'm interested in seeing it. It's good.
Will a mass audience flock to Inglourious Basterds the following week on the 21st?
I think so.
I think this will be more because of Brad Pitt. I think more people will see this opening weekend than maybe the whole run of Death Proof.
Which it'll still be a failure.
I mean, remember, the movie that this is based on is not, I mean, and it, I don't even know, it's just, I mean, I think he's taking the name Inglourious Basterds from the Italian movie, which itself is a ripoff of The Dirty Dozen. But I think there's enough interest to see Quentin Tarantino do a war movie and to see Brad Pitt and to see some of the other people in it that I do think that there is a lot of interest. Because if they're not going to see this, I don't know what they're going to go see by Tarantino, because this is the last thing in the bag of tricks that he's been talking about for so long. I mean, he's been talking about this movie since Jackie Brown.
I
also think the marketing of this movie is very telling, and the placement of it in August is very telling. I think the Weinstein Company learned a lot from the Grindhouse movie, releasing them into the dead zone that is Easter weekend or whatever it was that it came out. They're releasing this in August, which is can be a big time if the right movie comes out. And they've started marketing it very, very early. I think the marketing campaign's going to ramp up big time come August. And
right.
People are going to get real excited about it because, you know, it's Tarantino. It's World War II. It's an action movie.
Yeah.
Extremely violent by all accounts.
Brad Pitt, you know.
Brad Pitt. I mean, if someone said, what do the Weinsteins have against holidays? Like, they released Grindhouse Easter weekend, and then they released The Mist, probably the most downbeat of films on the Thanksgiving weekend. So it was probably safe to release this and no holidays are around.
Right. Yeah. But they're brave, too. I mean, Inglourious Basterds, you're right. It's getting a lot of press already, that whole big American Idol spotlight last week.
Yeah.
Which is a strange place to spotlight Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
But even so, there's 40 million people watching it, so you can't
that
blame them.
That can't hurt.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm worried about how he's managed to pare it down, because he was on Charlie Rose promoting Kill Bill, I think, Volume 2 or something. And he said, this is a tough nut to crack. I've been working on the screenplay forever. I think it has some of the best dialogue I've ever written, but right now it stands at 500 pages and I'm not done. So I'm wondering the process that went to, you know, kind of liquefying that and making it tighter.
Yeah, I mean, when he says 500 pages and he's not done, that's, I mean, he's one of the, and I love him for his self-indulgence, but, I mean, how do you go from 500 pages to whatever, you know, what we're talking about, 100
to a two-and-a-half-hour movie. Yeah.
I mean, how do you do
again,
that?
Again, talking about lessons learned, I think maybe he learned a little something from the Kill Bill movies, which He couldn't really pare it down ultimately, and he had to make two movies, and consequently, although they were popular, I don't think they were as powerful as they could have been one movie pared down. You know what I mean? If he had taken the best bits from one and two, put them together into one movie, I think it would have been a lot more memorable. And actually, Tarantino, in my mind, like, he left a bad taste in my mouth with Grindhouse or Death Proof.
Yeah.
But that's because he sort of banged it out and didn't really put his heart and soul into it. Every time he really applies himself and makes a movie, you really can't say that Tarantino's made a lot of bad movies. It's really only the Death Proof movie.
I think only Death Proof is it, because I actually do think all his heart and soul is in both Kill Bill movies. I mean, I'll go back and watch both of those time and time again, because everything that he loves and everything from all the previous films is in there. Death Proof, it does seem rushed. It's more of a gimmick than a movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the Weinstein Company, they're getting brave too, because just a week later they're releasing their other big tentpole, which is Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Yeah.
Which, this is a great, like, late summer, all the kids go back, all the teenagers go back, but this is one last, you know, movie for them.
I want to see where he's taking this. I'm really curious after the last film where he's taking these characters.
I saw clips from it. It was on Entertainment Tonight. Again, another weird place to see Rob Zombie Halloween 2 coverage. But I don't know. I mean, these aren't films that I take seriously, necessarily. But I did like what he did with Halloween.
I liked what he did too. Yeah.
I thought it injected fresh, you know, something mm-hmm. fresh into it. Or,
well, and that first movie came out in August too, did it not?
Right.
I believe. And it was fairly popular. So
yeah.
I it could happen again. And I agree with you, Jerry. I thought he had an interesting take on it.
Mm-hmm.
He did a little. Made it a little bit different. It was a little bit more textured than your typical slasher movie.
Right.
And he is, I think, actually a really promising filmmaker in the fact that he decided not to do another original work like Devil's Rejects or House of a Thousand Corpses and decided to go back to the Halloween thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe says something. Maybe he's got something interesting. And he said that it's completely different. It's not, like, Halloween was, his first Halloween movie was a remake of the first Halloween movie. This is not a remake of the second Halloween movie.
Right.
This is a totally new direction for these characters, and he's got some changes in mind. So
he has some big changes in mind, from what I've read. I mean,
yeah,
I think it's really curious.
Yeah,
and everybody. I mean, already the fanboys are up in arms because Michael Myers is without a mask for like a third of the movie, and they're like sacrilege.
How is I really trust Rob Zombie's instincts and. He knows this stuff. All you have to do is watch The Devil's Rejects, and you're like, this guy understands the 70s almost, if not better in some cases, than Tarantino.
Yeah.
And also with the fanboys, come on, fanboys. Like,
yeah.
How many times have the fanboys been up in arms about something?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And been right about it versus how many times have they been up in arms about something? And it turns out that, you know, the filmmaker has respect for the material and knows
yeah.
what he's doing and is trying to make a good movie. Like, very rarely do the fanboys get up in arms about something and they turn out to be right. I can only think of Phantom Menace, for instance. The only time I can think
of. Yeah, the only time.
But
even though... Like I said earlier in the show, you can't make a movie for that one segment of the population. It's
right.
It's just a losing proposition on every level.
I agree completely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, we've spoken many times about how this is the year of the great director. We've already discussed several of them with Tarantino and Michael Mann. Another biggie comes out October. Let's go through some of the highlights of the rest of the year. Another biggie on October 2nd is Shutter Island, the new Scorsese.
Right, yeah.
Have you seen that teaser poster, Chris?
I saw the teaser poster, and I was a little bit confused as to whether there was maybe some question as to whether it was legitimate, or was this a real teaser poster, or was it not? Did it turn out that was an actual teaser poster for it?
It was photographed at a trade show. I mean, so it
okay.
was.
Or yeah. It was legitimate then.
Okay, so it's okay.
Okay. Well, so, then, in that case, I thought. I mean, because I did think it was a really cool poster. I mean, what can you tell? We're sitting here talking about like idiots, you know, getting up in arms about having seen a trailer or whatever.
Yeah, but
we're trying to judge a movie based on a poster.
Yeah.
But that said, it was. That said, it was a really neat poster.
Yeah.
It was pretty
Scorsese.
Cool.
I mean, yeah.
Does it look like? Does it seem like Cape Fear territory though?
No, it's not Cape Fear territory. It's a totally different.
Oh, that's a shame.
Totally different.
I love Cape Fear.
Well, I love both versions of Cape Fear, but this is different. This is gonna be.
I'm not saying it's about a serial rapist. I'm saying that it's in the thriller genre.
Oh, it's a thriller. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's Dennis Lehane, based on a Dennis Lehane book, but it's different.
Yeah, again, an excellent cast. It's Scorsese. It's a thriller. Yeah, I'm there. He sold me when he signed on to it.
You know, it's interesting. DiCaprio was interviewed by Charlie Rose around Revolutionary Road time. I always get those confused.
Yeah, it's easy to. I mean,
and he asked about Shutter Island, and tell me what to expect from Shutter Island. And DiCaprio said, I have no idea, because the thing about Marty is. We shoot the movie, and then he spends 2 years in editing. So I don't know how it's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to be amazing. It's Marty, but his movies truly are just absolutely made in the editing. And for him to shoot in such a specific way,
mm-hmm.
He doesn't shoot for the edit. I mean, I know that at times that he storyboarded at times. He has a history of storyboarding. So what? I wonder how many options he has in the editing room. Does he give himself? It must be a lot to nurture it over a course of 2 years. Anyway, that's my take.
No, it's 2 years. Yeah, I mean,
You're absolutely right, and that's what he's been doing in the last five years or so with all of his movies, like whether it was Departed, which we heard about for a long, long time and finally got a preview for, and it seemed like the movie came out like right on top of the preview. It really, there was not a long period.
No, there wasn't.
You hear about his movies for a long time before you actually ever really see anything of them.
Right.
That was true of The Aviator, too.
Mm-hmm.
And both times, I mean, it's, you know, what can I say? Like, this Scorsese kid, I think he's going places, you know?
And it has the Departed's time of year, too. I mean, apparently October is his time of the year now.
Yeah.
Now, is that the same screenwriter, William Monahan? Did he do Shutter Island
as
well?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so it's a good, they want to recreate everything. Good.
Friday, November 6th, we have The Wolfman, and we have, The Wolfman. Are we excited about that one? These kinds of movies, and this is directed by Joe Johnston,
big special effects guy.
Yeah.
Stepped in at the absolute last second to direct this movie, too, taking over for Mark Romanek.
Really two different directors,
Two completely different directors, and I don't have anything against Joe Johnston, actually. I think he's made a couple good movies. And, you know, Benicio del Toro, Anthony Hopkins, The Wolfman is, a character that, you know, I think they can do some really interesting stuff with.
We haven't really had any good werewolf movies in a very long time, so this could be a first. So.
Co-written by Andrew Kevin Walker.
Yeah. Yeah, right there, dude. That's a plus.
And the new Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is the new Wes Anderson movie.
Wait, you forgot another. Speaking of Wes, you forgot another great childhood. Where the Wild Things Are.
Where is that?
Isn't that October?
Oh,
I
could be.
It is October. Yeah, and talk about buzz.
Yeah.
Like, this is a movie that's been back and forth. We've all heard all the stories in the past years about what's been going on with this movie. And Spike Jonze had that great quote. When all the hubbub was coming out about it, the studio was upset about the movie. Spike Jonze had this great quote where he said, it's kind of like they were expecting I was going to give birth to a boy and I gave birth to a girl. That's basically that's how he described the whole studio process.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, a couple weeks ago, this preview comes out with that excellent Arcade Fire music behind it.
Yeah, it's magical.
And it looks completely awesome. And people, I haven't read any, talk about fanboys, fanboys are going nuts over this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, the expectations have gone 100% or 1,000% in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
The expectations are sky high on this thing.
Yeah, they have.
And let's not forget, too, that this book, while we all remember it lovingly from our childhood, this thing's like 17 pages long.
Yeah.
It's got like six words on each page. There's no real story there. There's not much.
No, it's incredible, though. I mean, it's just the trailer, just the only word I can say is magical.
Yeah, it's
magically delicious. Thanksgiving, Wednesday the 25th of November, 9. I'm going to go ahead and predict that 9 will be up for Oscars.
Yeah, it does feel that way. This is a musical, right? 9?
Yeah, Rob Marshall. Listen to this cast, dude. Daniel Day-Lewis, Marianne Cotillard, Penelope Cruz, Judy Dench, Nicole Kidman, Kate Hudson, Sophia Loren.
Yeah. You had me at Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
Anthony Mangella
writes it.
Oh, wow. He wrote the script?
He and Michael Tolkien wrote the script.
Wow, that's quite a combo.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, that's the most pedigreed movie of the fall.
Yeah, that really is. But you got a movie in there that comes out at the end of the year that is still the one you're looking forward to the most.
Yeah, we're getting to it. You're always like blowing the load, dude.
Always doing that. Well, I'm just surprised we're talking about the fall. We haven't even gotten to the summer yet. We're already talking about the fall.
I understand what Jerry's talking about, though, and I'll wait for you to mention it, but that is a big elephant in the room in terms of movies this year. We all know what we're talking about here. I mean, it's such an elephant in the room.
Let's talk about it. We got 2 minutes until our next guest comes on. So December 18th, Avatar, which I have argued will be the movie of the year.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue with that.
I haven't heard your take on this yet. On the show,
You're talking to me.
Yes.
I agree with you completely with everything that I'm excited about in movies this year. Not so much in the summer, but later in the year, things like Shutter Island and these other movies we've been talking about, Where the Wild Things Are. I would flush them all down the toilet to find out what James Cameron what got him back in the director's chair after 10 years, more than 10 years. He's been working on this thing, 12 years. What it is that got him back and what it's going to be like. And talk about, we were talking about Quentin Tarantino and, you know, talk about a guy who hasn't really made any bad movies or definitely hasn't made any unsuccessful movies, if you don't count Piranha 2, which I don't.
I don't think many do, but all right.
Could you be more, I don't know if there's a more intelligent filmmaker out there, and I'm not talking about the way he makes films, just if you hear the guy talk, if you listen to his commentaries, if you listen to his interviews, he's such an intelligent guy.
Yeah.
It seems like he approaches movies that way, like the way that an engineer would, or the way that, you know,
And yet he's a great dramatist. I mean, he has those two minds.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is a rarity, which is something that George Lucas does not have, necessarily.
No, that's very true.
And these special effects that we keep hearing about. Like, special effects have come so far in the last 20 years, and all of a sudden everyone, from Steven Spielberg to Michael Bay to Peter Jackson, are all talking about this technology, which is shrouded in mystery, that James Cameron has developed for this one movie. And they're all taking that technology, sight unseen, whether Avatar works or not, taking that technology and standing on his shoulders and going and making things like Tintin and all these other movies with his technology. So what is it? I mean, isn't that exciting? He hasn't had a movie in 12 years. He's got this new technology. It's an interesting, big, huge sci-fi story. And, once again, it's the most expensive movie ever made.
I mean,
to boot.
Let me say this, and then I'll close this up, and our next guest is waiting patiently. Avatar, Time Magazine, a reporter from Time Magazine, saw some footage from it and said, and this is not the first time this has been said, this will change the way people enjoy movies and people make movies. It's a new experience, and I look to someone like James Cameron to deliver something like that, and by all accounts, he has.
Yeah, he has, not only with this movie, but in the past. He's the guy who does that. Every couple of years, he comes along and changes things. So,
and people that doubt that this will be the story of the year, the movie of the year, just look to his last movie. I mean, it wasn't a dud.
Yeah, I mean, you can't doubt. It's what I always said after, like, The Lord of the Rings was done and the Star Wars stuff was done, the only thing left, really, we haven't heard from Cameron. And that will be the last word and the first word on anything new.
Yeah, it had to be something special to bring him back.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the year in a nutshell. This has been a great hour and a half so far. We've talked to M. Emmett Walsh and reviewed the movies we're most excited about throughout the year. And Chris, buddy, I had a great time.
Yeah, Chris, it was wonderful.
I did too. Great show, guys. I hope to do it more often in the future.
Yes.
We'll see you next week.
Okay, guys.
Yeah, we'll see you next week, man.
All right, buddy.
All right, take care.
Bye, man. All right, let's get to our next guest. I saw this film last night, Laid to Rest, and it is fantastic. It is a terrific new old-school kind of gore-fest horror film, and it comes out on DVD. Yeah, it's really intense, and I was giggling with delight at how far they go in this movie.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, it comes out on DVD this Tuesday, April 21st, starring Bobby Sue Luther, Kevin Gage, terrific actor, man, and Lena Headey. This film is written and directed by special makeup effects artist Robert Hall on the heels of his successful directorial debut, Lightning Bug. His legendary makeup work graces films and projects as diverse as The Island of Dr. Moreau, Vacancy, Terminator, The Sarah Connor Chronicles. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's very versatile, and actually he's the owner and founder of one of the most successful special makeup effects houses in the industry. It's called Almost Human. It is a terrific pleasure to welcome to the show filmmaker Robert Hall. Let me bring up his line. Robert, are you with us?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. After all that epic James Cameron talk, let's talk about my little micro-budget spot.
No, I really enjoyed this movie, and it seems like you guys delighted in all the stuff you were able to accomplish in this film, and all the, you know, and as I was giggling, I said, "Am I sick for having so much fun in this movie?"
Am I sick for killing people for a living? I mean, that's why we do it, you know. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, we made this film very. We started out independent, and the good folks at Anchor Bay came and acquired the movie right before we were finishing it. But, you know, it's a small movie. And but me having a resource like Almost Human, that's my sort of my day job is doing effects for other people's films, allowed me the opportunity to put a lot of really great stuff like that that would usually cost a fortune into my own movie.
Yeah, it looks terrific. Tell me, first of all, and then we'll get into the movie in more in depth, but give me a little background on you. Were you particularly taken by this genre of movie when you were a kid?
Absolutely, yeah. No, I just left I'm actually en route right now, just left the Fangoria Weekend of Horrors.
Cool.
I'm sitting in traffic now in Los Angeles, leaving the convention center. But, you know, I went to my first Fangoria show when I was 16 years old. So, I mean, I'm, you know, definitely into that and all the slasher films. Halloween is one of my favorite films of all time. I love all John Carpenter's films and, you know, even the bad slasher films of the 80s, most of the Friday the 13th sequels are pretty terrible as films, but, you know, I was certainly inspired by all of those things and I wanted to scare people and, you know, for the first, you know, decade or so of my life, it was primarily just doing effects. I mean, I got my start at Roger Corman's. Doing all of his, doing all the 90s Roger Corman stuff, not the cool Pit and the Pendulum 60s stuff before I was born, but you know all the fun like
New Horizon
stuff. Yeah, I did. Well, I did Concord, New Horizon stuff.
Yeah.
I was sort of the last graduating class. I mean, you always hear of Jim Cameron and all those guys going through, but I went through in the mid 90s and did all of Roger's movies. So,
but you actually started. I think you convinced someone to make you an apprentice on Abel Ferrara's Body Snatchers.
Absolutely, yeah. Tom Berman is a very old school legendary effects makeup artist, and I lived in Alabama at the time, and I went down there with my humble little book and just said, "Hey, would you flip through this? I live near where you're shooting," and you know, he brought me onto the movie, and I was 18 years old, and that was my first movie making deal. And then I had to go back to deboning chickens at the Tyson Chicken Plant the next week.
So I didn't
last very long.
Yeah, you worked for Abel Ferrara. That's incredible.
Well, yeah, I mean, I worked for Tom Berman, so, I mean, I was a little kid with big hair, just going around listening to whatever.
That's quite a first film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, but literally the week before that, I was, you know, working at a chicken plant, cutting cartilage out of a chicken, dreaming about working on movies, and then went and did that. I had to go back, so it was, that was my first taste, and it wasn't long after that I just, you know, moved out here with basically like $80 in my pocket.
Right.
I've been dying to ask someone about this film. And you did work on it, so I'm curious.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you on the set of Island of Dr. Moreau, and was that as surreal as you weren't? Okay.
I was not. No, I worked – that was a time when I worked for other shops, and I worked for Stan Winston's company on that, and I painted a lot of the hero prosthetics for a lot of the characters.
Right.
But, no, I did not get to go to Australia with the guys and shoot that, but I know it was a very challenging movie. You know,
that's a kind way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, the first director that basically got the project set up, I really believe it was Richard Stanley, kind of got getting fired off his own movie, and it was just a lot of weird stuff.
So you worked with Stan Winston. He was really the last major idol of the special effects industry, wasn't he? He was just a master.
He was a legendary guy, yeah. And I got to work with him briefly at his studio there, and it was, you know, it was amazing. It's a different time then, you know, and it's certainly a different time now for effects stuff. I mean, when I moved to Los Angeles, it was '93, and pretty much the heyday of the big makeup effects shows. We're kind of going away. This Jurassic Park had just come out, and like everybody was like, you know, CGI is going to take over your jobs. There's not going to be any makeup effects in 10 years. And, you know, 4 years later, I started my own company, and, you know, now here I am. So I kind of came in a weird time. But I think you have to sort of embrace a lot of that stuff, and, you know, even with Laid to Rest as well, like a lot of the deaths people are really responding to, and it's because, unlike when you're working for someone else, I didn't change my mind. You know, when you're creating an effect, and you're like, it has to be shot this way. We should use this angle. We should use this kind of setup. And then this is the only way it's going to work. And you get there on the day, and invariably, you know, someone wants to change something, and you're like, well, it's not going to work, and they don't care. So with my own movie and my own effect setup, I don't change my mind. You use a little bit of digital if you need to, but you plan all that stuff instead of just this breeding of lazy filmmaking, which is happening now. Where people just say, we'll put in the monster later. We'll put in the gore later.
Yeah.
We'll put in this. You know, we didn't do that on Laid to Rest. It was a lot of practical stuff with like little bits of digital help sometimes that you couldn't do practically.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you wanted to make you wanted this to be kind of an old school slasher, simple serial killer concept, didn't you? Late to rest.
That's pretty much it. Yes, that's exactly it. I mean, it was sort of a knee-jerk reaction to a lot of the films that had sort of done that in recent years, but I felt it'd been a little more campy. So what I wanted to do is make a film like that didn't know it was a film. And that's sort of what Late to Rest is. It's just as if one of those movies, you know, that we all love from back in the day is being made now and being taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where it sprang from. Not in the writer's strike. We're all sort of some of the cast from Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, you know, was going to be in the next movie. And we were trying to figure out when we were going to do it. And this writer's strike came up and we, you know, just immediately went off and did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You wrote this in Thailand. Did I hear that correctly?
I wrote most of it in Thailand, which is very bizarre. Well, the writer's strike was coming up and my wife and I had already booked a really long vacation in Thailand because we weren't going to work. And so I went there essentially with a title and an outline for Laid to Rest. And I said, I'm going to come back with this. You know, this was December. I said, I'm going to come back with this thing. And in January, we're going to start prepping it. And we're going to shoot it. And that's what we did. So I essentially took, you know, almost a month and just finished the movie. I mean, of course, as we were prepping it, I tweaked it all the way up. And mm-hmm. So there's probably 2 or 3 months of actual writing time. But yeah, I did the majority of the Southern Gothic slasher film sitting in Thailand, which is very strange.
Wow. Inspiration comes in the oddest places,
yeah.
I guess.
But, yes.
For those of you out there that don't know, you are working with your wife, Bobby, is the lead in this film.
And the producer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the producer, yes. What is that collaboration like? Was it a joy? Were there any tense moments? Or?
You know, the tense moments came after. it's weird because when she's wearing two hats, you know, she literally took the acting part of it very, very seriously. She had to carry the entire film, and so she had a lot of weight on her shoulders. But she was also – she produced some music videos that I directed, but other than that, you know, first-time feature producer. So yeah, I mean, switching between the hats does cause a little bit of tension sometimes mm-hmm. because it's like, what are you coming at me now as a producer? Are you coming at me now as an actor who's mad that I pushed you too far in the last scene? But I think that the closeness that we have actually helped the movie.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a real terrific vehicle for her. And I'm wondering in crafting this, that you were aware that you wanted to avoid kind of the typical Scream Queen stereotype for this role?
That's exactly right, yeah. I'm in a tunnel. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
no, you're fine.
Yeah,
you're
good.
Oh, okay, good.
That's great.
I was a little worried. I'm in a giant tunnel right now sitting in bumper to bumper traffic. Yeah, Bobby wanted to actually be on the phone today, but we had our premiere last night in L.A., and she's got laryngitis. She actually can't speak at all.
Yeah.
I'm going home to take care of her right now. But tell me the question again.
You wanted to avoid the typical stereotypical Scream Queen.
Yes, absolutely. I just had my navigation Scream Queen talking to me. That's exactly right. I mean, you know, I couldn't very well put my wife in it. I mean, I did this as a vehicle for her, you know. So the last thing I wanted to do is put her in a skimpy outfit and covered in blood going, come on, guys, it's probably just the wind, you know.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I didn't want to do that. Not only do I not, you know, like to make those kinds of movies, yeah, all of that stuff is fun, but it's like I really care about character. I mean, my first film, Lightning Bug, is a semi-autobiographical film about me growing up in the South, and it's a very heartfelt sort of movie.
Right.
And that's the kind of films that I like to make. And so with this, I said, we're going to do something really different with your character. Her character has a head injury from the beginning of the movie, so she can't even really, you know, form a sentence correctly, and she can't think of the names for stuff. And that's, you know, that's kind of a... That's different for a lead in a especially in a slasher film, and it gave her a lot of layers to actually chew on as an actress. So I think ultimately it helped her. I mean, it was definitely awkward at first for her to get wrapped around it. Like, you're sure this is the right direction? But I think we created a fun character.
Right.
I think so too. And you talk about the importance of characters, and you've got wonderful actors in this film, and Kevin Gage in a surprising nice guy role for a change.
Well, Kevin's one of my great friends, and he plays the ultimate asshole in Lightning Bug. He plays my evil stepdad, and I'm even guilty of making Kevin a bad guy. I mean, he's Wayne Grow from Heat, you know? I mean, he's a bad guy. Kevin plays the bad guy better than anybody, so I've been guilty of it myself, but when we went to do this movie, you know, I thought I had to have a shepherd for Bobby's character, both on screen and off, you know, as her first leading role. I wanted someone that would be very supportive and encouraging to her. and also on screen, you know, Tucker, the role that he plays was mm-hmm. also, you know, a lot more like Kevin is in real life. So I wrote the movie for Kevin point blank, and mm-hmm. and he was so excited that he actually got to play a good guy for a change.
He is great. He's great in it. And tell me about the atmosphere of a horror film set. How is it different from directing a drama or being involved in any other genre?
You know, I'm probably the wrong person to ask about that because my two experiences were very strange. You know, I mean, my first movie, Lightning Bug, we shot in a very small dry county in Alabama that I grew up in. And mm-hmm. we shot in my actual high school, and we shot in, like, a trailer park that I lived in, and we shot in, like, a convenience store that I lived in. So it was a extremely bizarre, cathartic process for that film. So, in terms of the days and stuff like that, I mean, it's all relatively the same, except for when you get into doing a lot of the stuff and lay the rest, there's a lot of action. A lot of action, there's a lot of special effects, a lot of crazy stuff that does take a lot more time. And in this one, we shot in rural Maryland at an insane asylum, and the whole movie takes place in one night. So, you know, we shot all nights for essentially a month. So that does take its toll on you, and you definitely feel a little bit like a vampire when you don't ever see the sun. But in terms of, you know, the directing, you have to give yourself a little bit more time when you're doing action and special effects. Your page count will be lower for sure.
Yeah, and yet, I was really interested in this. The way you shot it, what you shot it on, your footage went directly to a memory card, and a lot of times you were editing on location, right?
Yes, absolutely right. Yeah, it was cool. Like, what I wanted to do, I mean, digital certainly not new, although there are a lot of great new cameras that are coming out now that's completely eradicating the stigma that used to be with HD features, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, ten years ago, it was like, shoot on video or film? Oh, it's a video. It's not a real movie, you know? There was sort of that kind of stigma.
Oh, yeah.
It's not really happening anymore, you know? There's 60 and 70 and $100 million movies being shot on digital.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on your cameras. It depends on your lenses. It depends on your DPs. We shot on a camera called the Panasonic HPX 3000. It has a memory card that's essentially about the size of a credit card. And
okay.
Got a music video on the smaller version of that, the little 200. And I thought the workflow was amazing because you didn't need a lot of special equipment. The RED, a lot of these cameras you hear about, they have proprietary hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
They sometimes come with technicians that only know, you know, how to exchange the memory and what, you know,
right.
that kind of stuff. And that always freaked me out. So I wanted to I wanted to do something where you could go to Best Buy and buy hard drives if you needed to, if you ran out, and put your stuff on there. And that's sort of what we did. And yes, we were downloading and cutting in Final Cut on a laptop and hard drives from Best Buy, and we were cutting scenes. Like by lunchtime, I could see everything that I shot cut.
Mm-hmm.
The same
wow.
day, which was
that's great.
Incredible asset on a movie like this, you know, just how much it changed in the 5 years since I shot Lightning Bug. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I shot that on Super 16, and I loved the look of that, and I thought it was, you know, really cool for what I wanted. But when you do think about it, you look at the bottom line when you're doing a low-budget movie, you spend $30,000 or $40,000 on something that's not in front of the screen, which is telecine and transfer costs and film costs and all of that kind of stuff, and you just completely wipe that out when you go digital.
Right.
Mm, that's amazing. So tell me how satisfying it has to be, because I would imagine this film in a theater, the reaction has to be incredible.
It's killer. Well, literally.
Yeah. To some of these kills, I mean, I was watching it alone here in my apartment. I was screaming out. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is incredible.
It's amazing. I mean, it's why you do this stuff. You know, I mean, even when I'm doing effects for other people's movies, you know, even just silly stuff like I did Pineapple Express and, you know, we blow Seth Rogen's ear off and that.
Right.
I just love
right.
just watching, going to the theater, just watching the audiences cringe at that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff. I mean, that's why you do it ultimately. Last night was in LA was actually the third time I've gotten to see Laid to Rest with an audience. And for the select kill scenes, I always kind of find myself hiding down by the front, you know, watching the audience and not watching the movie so I can see them turn away and scream and cry and freak
wow.
out. Because I love
cool.
that, of course.
That's
why
great.
You do it.
Yeah, that's great. The movie is called Laid to Rest. It comes out on DVD Tuesday, the 21st, and it's highly recommended. It's a great time. Let me ask you real quick. Do you know what's going on with the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles? Do you know what the future of that is?
The future. Well, no one knows. There is a lot of rumors online that were canceled, which are not true. Because no one really knows until mid-May. That's when Fox does all of their big push, and they, you know, they decide. Well, all the networks do really. And they decide what's coming back. They decide what pilots are doing. Yada yada yada. So that whole process is coming up in a few weeks. So I'd say in about a month we'll know for sure. I know that we went up in ratings. I know that we're like one of the highest downloaded shows on iTunes, I think it is. And, I mean, if you take into account all the new media, we're doing really well. Yeah. So
it was a great episode.
Yeah.
It was really incredible.
I was happy I got to blow Summer Glau's face off on that. That was a lot of fun. And, you know, speaking of Summer Glau with her face off, she came to our premiere last night, and she hates horror films. She is a very very docile, you know, she likes very simple sort of movies, and she's very shy and sweet. And, you know, she actually came just out of support for us and came and saw the movie. And she, well, I'd say she saw the movie, but she had her hands in front of her face. Pretty funny to see that. But, yeah, we'll see with Terminator. I don't know. No one really knows. You know, there's a lot of rumors, but as of right now, they're totally unanswered.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate your time very much tonight, and it's a terrific movie, and congratulations on it.
Thank you.
Wish your wife the best. I hope she gets better soon, and she's welcome to come on the show anytime.
That's awesome, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Have a good night.
Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Robert Hall. The movie is Laid to Rest. It comes out on DVD April 21st, which is Tuesday.
Tuesday. Go get it. Like, camp out now.
Right.
I'm going to get it.
So. It's got a great villain, like this Chrome Skull guy. I mean,
it sounds really cool, and he's just great. I love talking to him. He's a really good guy.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that they do, Jonathan Schaech is in one scene of this movie. The thing that they do to his face is...
Wow. I've never heard you talk so enthusiastically about a horror film. This is cool.
Yeah, it's a fun one. It's a fun slasher. Okay, guys, or guy, it's been a good show. Very exciting.
Yes, it was.
We'll see you back here Wednesday night for goodness knows what. And I think we'll have the producer Don Murphy and the writer-director of... While She Was Out, which is a Kim Basinger thriller, Lucas Hawes thriller that comes out on DVD Tuesday the 28th. And I think the real live rock band behind Anvil, the new independent movie Anvil that's coming out.
That's supposed to be really good.
Yeah. I haven't watched it yet, but I will check it out. So that's it. Jerry, thank you, my friend.
All right, no problem. Thank you. It was great to have Chris on.
It was fun. It was fun. And Emmett Walsh, man.
Yeah. Awesome time. Good night, everyone.
Good night, buddy. Bye-bye.